This is 91.7 WVXU Cincinnati Edition. I'm Marianne Zalesnik. It seems people interact with friends, family, and colleagues as much or more on social media than in person. Today, we're going to find out all the ways people connect online and the best way to use all of the services available. Joining me to talk about social media, our CEO and lead trainer at Bootcamp Digital, Kristen Ayer, and solution architect and partner with Definity Partners, Dave Hatter. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100 or email us at talk@wvxu.org. You also can find us on Facebook and Twitter. Well, good afternoon. Glad to have you both here.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks.
All right, we're going to start out with the well-knowns. I think that's a good place to start just to see how they're doing. Facebook and Twitter, I think, are probably the most well-known. You correct me if I'm wrong on that. I've read articles that Facebook is declining. Young people don't like it. I've read other articles that, yeah, that's true, but there are still more young adults on Facebook than on any other social media. Let's start with Facebook. Where's it going? What do you use it for? Why is it good or not?
Sure. So you read all the time, young kids aren't using Facebook. And the reality is Facebook is still the 800-pound gorilla of social media. People spend more time on Facebook than any other social platform. It's more broadly used than any other platform. The other thing that people don't mention when they talk about that is that where most younger people are spending their time is Instagram, which I'm sure we'll get to later. And Facebook owns Instagram. So when you really think about it from an ecosystem perspective, Facebook as a company still has the time and attention of people across all demographics. So it really is something that I think is going to continue to grow and be a part of our lives.
Yeah, I don't think Facebook's going away anytime soon. I can tell you from practical experience with my teenage kids, they don't really use it that often anymore. They'll get on it once in a while. But I think Chris is right. I think with the fact that they own Instagram, and I think they'll eventually get sucked back in at some point. You know, while the cool factor may have worn off for teens at this point, I think eventually, as Krista mentioned, it's the 800-pound gorilla. They'll eventually have to come back because that's where people will be. That's where old guys like me are, right?
Well, what I'm finding is a lot of my parents' friends who I haven't seen in years are suddenly friending me on Facebook, and these are people in their 70s and older. Are you finding that it's just becoming more broad for everybody to be on Facebook?
Yeah, I think so, because I see a similar sort of thing with people. You know, I'm in my 40s. People older than me, I definitely see on there more. My parents' friends, my friends' parents, that sort of thing. So, yeah, I think you're absolutely right about that. And again, there's so much stuff and there's so many things going on there, and it's relatively easy for people to use. It's not going away anytime soon.
Yeah, and my grandma just joined Facebook. She actually doesn't type herself. She makes my uncle do her typing.
That's great.
Yeah, that's a new way to do Facebook.
But, you know, here's the thing also to think about is that, you know, a teenager right now maybe doesn't have the communication needs for Facebook, right? Sharing a bunch of pictures on Instagram meets their communication needs because everyone they interact with, they probably are also seeing in person and they can text and everything else. And I think it'll be interesting to see as teens mature when they're in their mid to late 20s, then do they find a use for Facebook? Because really, you know, the kinds of things you can share and communicate on Facebook are so broad and powerful. And, you know, when people start having kids is when a lot of people discover how powerful Facebook is, where their families can see pictures of their children and all that stuff. So I think it remains to be seen, really, how Facebook will fit into people's communication needs as they go through different stages of their lives.
Is it possible that, you know, now you think about Facebook and it's the place I've connected with all my old high school friends that I haven't seen in 30 years or whatever. Is that going to be when people are so connected on Facebook now, but you never lose contact with people? You'll always be in contact with
them? Yeah, I think there's at least a pretty good possibility that'll be the case because I've had a similar kind of scenario too where literally people I haven't seen in 30 years, 25 years just sort of pop up, you know, and it's like all of a sudden you start talking again. It's been really interesting because a lot of these people, I'm amazed they even remember me. You know, I was sort of the dorky computer kid in, in high school. I wasn't like Mr. Well-Known or anything. So, yeah, I think to Krista's point, I agree. I think as folks get older, even though they may have turned away now in their teen years, eventually their parents will be there, their siblings will be there, their friends will be there. I think you can't help but get sucked back in at some point. Maybe I'll be wrong, but I kind of agree with her on that. It's such an easy platform for people to use, and it's got so much critical mass already. I just think people will eventually come back to it.
What about businesses? Do you think that it's still a marketing tool? Is that a place? What are the best ways for businesses to use Facebook?
So when it comes to business use on Facebook, Facebook kind of changed the rules slowly over the last 2 years, where the short story is, if you have a business page, let's say 1,000 people like your page, on average, 1% of those people, between 1 and 5%, will probably see most of the stuff you post. So the ROI, therefore, has been declining for a lot of businesses. And you hear a lot of businesses kind of saying, well, I don't know, I shouldn't have to pay for Facebook. The reality is that even if you have to pay a little bit of money for Facebook, in my opinion, it's such a powerful tool. It has better targeting than any other advertising platform, period. I think it's such a great way for businesses to connect with people, even if they have to pay a little bit of money. You know, at the end of the day, if it's not worth you paying a little bit of money for people to see the things that you want to share, maybe you shouldn't be posting them.
And I would basically agree with that. I think Chris is right. It's got some incredibly powerful analytics tools and the ability to target based on a lot more than just a Google search, because you're already telling it all this information about yourself. So, you know, obviously, they want to maximize their return on investment in the platform, so they are going to continue to tweak it, I'm sure, and ultimately figure out ways to get businesses to pay. I think a lot of it, too, depends on what kind of market are you in. You know, if you're a business to business, I'm not sure how effective it is. I think it's probably worth being involved, but I don't know that I'd spend a ton of money on it personally. But for business to consumer, I think it's still probably one of the best platforms out there. So, you know, again, it depends on who you're trying to reach and what you're trying to accomplish.
Now, Facebook always seems to be going through some change. They went back to their old format. I had this crazy thing for a while that none of my friends got, but I did, and it looked different than everybody else's. Are we going to continue to see all those constant changes, or are they going to settle down?
Yeah, I think you will continue to see changes over time because, I mean, I don't have any insight into what Facebook is doing internally, but I'm sure they're looking at their own analytics and I think taking ideas from other platforms. I think these folks all liberally appropriate other folks' ideas when they make sense. So, you know, I think it's going to be in their own best interest and in theory, if they keep the users in mind and users' best interest, to make the platform better over time. Now, you can argue what's better, and I know a lot of people hate change, and a lot of the changes I have not really liked myself. So, but yeah, I don't think you'll see any end to that, although hopefully it might slow down a little bit.
And I think really the biggest challenge for Facebook right now is the relevancy of the information they're showing you, right? So an average person on Facebook is connected to 130 people and 80 additional groups, pages, and events. So that's 200 things. Let's say they each update 5 times a day. That's 1,000 status updates a day that an average person, not a power user, an average person could be exposed to. Who has time for that? I don't have time for that, and I sort of do this for a living. So what Facebook, I think their biggest challenge has been trying to show you the stuff you're most likely to want to see. And I don't know that they've done a great job of figuring that out. That's what most people complain about, is the stuff they see in their newsfeed. You know, one of the things I notice, for example, is there's a lack of synchronization between devices. So mm-hmm. I'll see an update on my computer, and then when I log on to my phone, it's showing me the same updates I've already seen. They don't seem to communicate well. And I think a lot of people will argue they don't like the way Facebook's filtering their news feeds for whatever reasons. And I think that's going to be the biggest challenge, is kind of figuring out what do people actually want to see in their news feeds. Whether it's businesses, I do think people want to hear from businesses that they like. But whether it's businesses or humans, how do they bring you the stuff you really, really care about?
And I again, agree with you completely. I wouldn't like a business if I wasn't potentially interested in hearing what they had to say, what they were up to, useful information they might share. So, yeah, I want to see that stuff, or I wouldn't sign up for it in the first place. But, yeah, it's tricky because I guess, like, for me personally, I would rather them not filter anything. Just let me have it all, and then if you're giving me stuff I don't want, I will unfriend you or not like your page anymore or whatever.
Or hide. So, hide your posts. Yes. I did that with a couple of people. Hide those posts.
I'm sure I get hit in a lot, actually.
We're talking about social media today on Cincinnati Edition. If you have a question or a comment, we'd like to hear from you. 513-419-7100. You can email us, talk@wvxu.org. And we are on Facebook and Twitter, and you can post your questions there. When it comes, we talk a lot about Facebook, and we're going to talk more about it, I'm sure. But let's move to Twitter another source. For me personally, I tend to use Facebook for personal use, and I use Twitter for business use. Is that common, or do you find that people separate that, or do they have different pages for different parts of their lives?
I think if you step back and look at how those two platforms are set up, the way that I kind of think about them is you have what I would consider more traditional type social networks. That would be Facebook, LinkedIn, and Google Plus. And then you have more broadcast and interest-based social networks. And I would put Twitter, Instagram, and Pinterest in that bucket. And what I think really makes Twitter different from Facebook is everything you post on Twitter is public. You can lock down your account. In my opinion, that defeats the point of participating. But like, you know, I can go on Twitter and search for people in Cincinnati talking about social media. I can connect with people based on a shared interest, based on a passion. I can broadcast messages that anyone can see. Most people use Facebook, on the other hand, as a closed network where you're communicating with people you already know. So to me, they're kind of two different purposes. And I think the reason a lot of people don't get Twitter is because you kind of need to have a reason for being there. You know, who do you want to connect with that maybe you don't know in real life? What interests would you want to connect with people about on Twitter? And I think it's an extraordinarily powerful tool, but it's a little trickier for people to get.
I hate to say it, but I agree yet again. You know, for me, I primarily use LinkedIn, Twitter, and Facebook, and I use each one of them differently. There's a small amount of overlap between them to some extent. But with the Twitter thing, I think Krista's main point that everything you post is public by default, and also it tends to be less conversational than Facebook. You know, while you can create a conversation with someone on there, it doesn't show up the same way. It's harder to participate in. So I would tend to agree with her that, you know, a lot of people can't really figure out why they would want to get on there. You know, what am I going to say in 140 characters that someone is going to care about? But I would turn it around and say, even if you don't necessarily have anything you want to say, it's an unbelievably powerful tool, in my opinion, to get information from sources you're interested in. Because you can follow organizations that are posting all kinds of interesting, useful content. You can follow your competitors. You can follow people where you might want to find a job. It makes the information come to you. It makes it very easy to tap into stuff that would be helpful to you, and it comes to you free all day long. So even if you don't want to participate and post a lot of stuff yourself, I think it's an extremely powerful tool just to get information that can be useful to you or your business.
Well, so of course, we use it here at WVXU all the time. A lot of folks follow both our 91.7 WVXU account. People follow me at M. Zalesnik. And we post news, and people get their news from Twitter in a lot of instances. One thing that happened to me, though, we were at home one night, and my daughter kept hearing these loud bangs in the neighborhood. And we finally went on Twitter and put our city in and said, loud bangs, or something like that, and found, you know, 40 other tweets explaining what they thought was going on. I don't remember, it was some event or something that we just didn't know was happening. But you can put in a community and find out something that's going on in that way.
Again, it's, I think, a really powerful tool just to get information, and especially things that are trending. Krista mentioned that as well. You know, you can pop in there at any time and see what people are talking about, do a search on a particular thing, and it tends to be a lot more immediate than something like Google. You know, Google's probably not going to pick something up until well after it's happened, where, you know, there's been well-known instances in the media of Twitter being used to report information out of riots and, you know, war and all kinds of different things.
You know, a great example of this, when I got on Twitter back in like 2007, there was an earthquake in the middle of the night in Cincinnati. And, you know, I was like, I think my house is shaking. It's the middle of the night, though. I could have been dreaming, right? So I got up, I turned on the TV, nothing, because, you know, actual news channels have to verify facts and things, right? So I turn on the news, there's nothing on the TV. I'm like, am I losing my mind? I log into Twitter, and immediately validation, everyone says, oh, I think there was an earthquake. Did you feel that? And so I think the real-time nature can be really interesting in a lot of those kinds of situations.
We're talking about social media. In just a moment, we'll continue our discussion. You can call us at 513-419-7100 or email us talk@wvxu.org. You also can find us on Facebook and Twitter. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Marianne Zalesnik. We're talking this afternoon about social media. What are the best platforms? How do you get the most out of them? Joining me, our CEO and lead trainer at Bootcamp Digital, Krista Nair, and solution architect and partner with Definity Partners, Dave Hatter. You can call us at 513-419-7100 or email us talk@wvxu.org. You also can find us on Facebook and Twitter. We did have a phone call from someone who was from Woodland, Joseph, calling in. He says he likes to remain anonymous online, which used to be a big part of social media. He wants to know if that's changing now, and is it if the dangers of putting too much info online still a problem?
I would say, you know, it's hard to, When you say anonymous, what do you really mean by anonymous? Because frankly, it's impossible to be, or very close to impossible to be truly anonymous. You pretty much have to know exactly what you're doing. So if you just want to basically have an account where it doesn't have your picture or name, you can still get by with that fairly easily. But to be truly anonymous is a pretty tricky proposition. So I would say it really depends on what your objective is. And yeah, I think you can definitely put too much information out there. I'll jump in here, Kristen.
I think also social media has kind of evolved. So if I think back in 2007, most of the people I connected with on social media weren't using their real names. You found most people on Twitter went by, you know, cute little handles. A lot of people who ran blogs never really disclosed who they were, maybe because of the types of things they were blogging about. But I think that I've seen a huge change in that over time, where most people now are willing to give up some privacy in return for the benefits of being able to connect with people. So if people never knew who I really was and I was just this, you know, anonymous entity posting things about social media, why would someone follow me, right? A big part of it is how you're connecting to those people. So I've seen a shift where I think now people are much more interested in connecting with real humans.
We got a tweet from Jordan who says he's using Twitter for news and Facebook and Instagram to keep up with friends. We talked about that. Christy on Facebook, more followers on Twitter, more interaction on Facebook. And if you can market on just one platform, which one would you choose and why?
I hate that question. Sorry. Sorry to whoever asked that. Well, here's why I hate it, right? Because there's not one answer. It would be like saying, if I were to pick a color to wear every day, what color would it be? Right? It depends.
Why pick, right? Why not do both?
Well, and it depends. You do have limited time, but different types of businesses are going to get different ROIs on different platforms. So when choosing where you're going to invest your time, you want to look at where's the audience you want to reach, what are the opportunities for marketers on that platform, and do you have the time to do it well? So, you know, I love Twitter, for example. I think it's a powerful platform. Most people on Twitter are posting multiple times a day. For some businesses, that's way too overwhelming. So even if strategically Twitter might be a great choice, if they don't have the capacity to do it well, they might be better off investing in Pinterest, where for a lower investment of time, they can still get results. So I don't think personally there's a single answer to that. I will say, though, Facebook has more users who spend more time on it than anyone else. So if you're thinking about mass communication and generally reaching people, that's kind of what I would say.
Yeah, okay. I agree. I think ultimately, again, it really depends on who is your audience, where are they currently, and what's your objective? What are you trying to get out of it? Is it a marketing thing? Are you trying to do direct sales? You know, are you B2C? Are you B2B? I agree. I don't think there is one right answer. But I also think you can spread yourself too thin, and being everywhere all the time potentially will not play all that well either. Again, as Krista mentioned, one of the great things about Facebook is it's got some very powerful targeting tools and some very powerful analytical tools. So fairly quickly, you can determine how effective this stuff is working, and you can tweak it as opposed to just kind of shotgun stuff out there. So, you know, if you want to reach the largest number of people with the minimal effort, Facebook is probably the best place to do it. And then I would say Twitter after that. You know, for me in the B2B space, I find LinkedIn is probably the most powerful platform for me personally. But again, I'm selling B2B services to other businesses. So,
B2B, keep using that term. What's that mean?
Business to business,
Business to business. Yeah. All right, just making sure I knew what you meant there. You mentioned LinkedIn. What is that best used for? I'm on LinkedIn because I feel like I ought to be. People are always trying to link to me that I have never heard of. And I always say, if I couldn't recognize you walking down the street, I probably ought not to link to you. Is that a good way to go or not? I mean, I've never heard of some of these people. Why would I want to link to them?
So I don't see, everyone has different ideas of how they want to use a social network and what they're comfortable with, right? And I always say, do what's comfortable for you. But in my opinion, from a professional perspective, unless someone's going to annoy you and try and sell you junk or spam you, there's not really a harm in connecting to them on LinkedIn. To me, the more, you know, if you think of the premise of marketing, it's about exposing people to you and your message. And so LinkedIn, really, you're marketing yourself. And the more people that are exposed to you and see what you do and understand you professionally, the more opportunities that can come your way. I'll share two quick stories with you about LinkedIn. I'm very active on LinkedIn, and I connect to a lot of people on LinkedIn. Now, when I started my business doing social media marketing, you know, 5 or 6 years ago, I started getting requests from people I went to college with to set up a social media strategy for their business, let's say. When I was in college, there was no social media and I majored in finance. How do they know what I'm doing now? through LinkedIn. Absolutely. We're not even Facebook friends because we're not real friends anymore, you know? And that's where I think the power is so phenomenal, because we never know what paths our lives will take professionally and who may be in a position to help us or who we may be in a position to help. And the more people you're connected to who are those loose ties, you know, who you don't keep up with regularly.
But you've at least heard of them, right?
I mean, some of them, yes. I connect to people I've not heard of, though. I mean, another example of a complete stranger, I participate in the Procter & Gamble alumni group. And someone in that group sent me a note and said, my company's thinking about doing social media. Could we work with you? Never met the guy before. You know, next time I was in New York, we had a meeting. They became a client. And I had never heard of him. He reached out to me on LinkedIn.
But that's different than people that just want to put you up as a link. I think that, I mean, I had some weather forecaster in Tucson. Well, I didn't know anything about this person. I mean, I guess maybe there's a reason. I just don't. I'm not as active on LinkedIn as you are, though. So I'm learning. Yeah. Maybe I need to start saying yes to more people.
And as a public personality, though, right? Maybe it's someone who's heard your show and liked it and respects you and your opinions, and that's their way of reaching out. Yeah, I just think you never know.
Dave?
Well, I'm like the most shameless LinkedIn promoter known to man, and anyone that knows me will generally tell you that. I pretty much agree with everything Krista said and would probably even take it to the next step. I mean, I started out being fairly conservative with who I would connect to on LinkedIn many years ago, and over time have found that unless there is some obvious red flag coming from you when you try to connect with me, like you're going to spam me with stuff, or you have no picture and you're in some third world country and there's no information about you, which is probably some kind of spammer, or possibly you're a competitor and I already know you and I know that you don't behave in an honest, ethical way, there's, in my opinion, there's no downside to having as many connections as possible. I totally agree with everything Krista said. I get leads out of this thing regularly. I mean, it's incredibly powerful. The more the merrier in my mind. So send me an invitation.
513-419-7100 is our number. Mary's calling from Lebanon. Hi, Mary. What's your question?
Hi, my question is about nonprofit organizations. What's the best way for them to use Facebook or Twitter when you have an event coming up? And then also, as a private person who volunteers, how do we protect ourselves when we are setting up Facebook accounts or Twitter accounts so that, you know, that we're helping out a nonprofit organization, but we ourselves don't want to have any difficulties?
Sure. So I think social media is so powerful for nonprofits. I've worked with a number of them. I think social media works well for friend raising, not fundraising, right? So it's a place to build community, to sort of gather your supporters and things like that. And, you know, almost think of it as a mailing list. I mean, it's much more powerful than that. But if you think about your mailing list, if you have this giant mailing list of, you know, 1,000 people, and you have an event coming up and you put out a mailer, 10% of those 1,000 people will come. And Facebook kind of works that same way, where if you collect people who are interested in you, encourage them to like your page and start building those relationships, when you have an event or something like that, people who like and support your organization will not only sign up for your event, but hopefully tell their friends. And that's the idea of a social network. It's social. And we're friends with people like us. So maybe I see a friend of mine is going to an event for a nonprofit, and that spurs me to look into it, and maybe I attend. When it comes to protecting yourself as an administrator, most social networks don't show who the actual human is behind a business page. So, for example, if you look at our page, Bootcamp Digital, you can't see whether I'm posting or one of my marketing coordinators. So that's kind of built into the social networks. They generally don't show who's doing the posting. What I would recommend, though, is make sure you have multiple administrators on your page. The worst problem I have working with nonprofits is that a volunteer set up a Facebook page and now is not a volunteer, and now no one from the organization can access that page anymore. So get a couple people attached to a page so that way you can always make sure you have access to it over time.
Mary, thanks so much for your call. We appreciate it. Scotty's calling from Clifton. Hi, Scotty. What's your question?
Hi, I run a small entertainment group in town, and we regularly play festivals and weddings and bars, the bar scene and all that business. So we run a Facebook and a Twitter account, and I often find trouble differentiating which type of post to put on Facebook and which types of posts to include on Twitter, and to make sure there's no redundancies or one just becomes useless. I wonder if you guys have any recommendations for me.
Well, I myself personally would worry less about the redundancy. Obviously, with Twitter, you have more limited space to work with, so sometimes you have to be a little bit more creative. You know, I generally try not to say the exact same thing across all these different platforms, but sometimes it makes sense that I want to say the exact same thing. So I wouldn't lose a ton of sleep over that personally. Again, I guess I would try to spend more time thinking about who is the audience you wanted to reach on each one of these platforms and try to target those messages accordingly.
I completely agree. And I think, you know, a lot of people ask about, can I put a status update in one place and have it automatically push out everywhere? Well, then you're going to post something that's not optimized for any channel. So I wouldn't lose sleep over it. Most people on social media don't see every single thing you post. I mean, think of all the pages you like. You don't see every post from them. You miss half of them. You catch it here and there. So I don't think that redundancy across networks is really worth worrying about.
And I think Carista raises another key point there, that just because you post something once doesn't mean that the vast majority of your network will even see it. And if you really want people to see something, while I wouldn't just go in there and repost it every 30 seconds or something, you will need to repeat that message over and over again to hit the maximum number of people or some similar version of it.
Yeah, and you can also try and be creative to make it sound different. So if you have a show coming up at a bar on a Friday night, right, you might do an announcement type tweet that says, hey, just wanted to let everyone know, here's where we're playing. And then maybe on Wednesday, you tweet something like, it's almost Friday, what are your plans for the weekend? Here's where we'll be. And so you just are repositioning the same content. Maybe you post a factoid about the bar, but you're posting the same kind of idea in different ways so it doesn't seem repetitive.
Yeah, Scotty, does that help?
Yeah, fantastic. Thank you guys so much.
Thank you. Dave, you were going to add something?
I was just going to throw in, too, and then obviously if the bar or wherever has a Twitter page or a Facebook page, you can link that in. A, you're doing them a favor. No one will not appreciate that. And B, you're exposing the message through their channels as well. So, yeah, that's another way to sort of maximize your return on investment there.
If you have a question about social media, 513-419-7100, or we're on Facebook and Twitter. Jane on Facebook said, what is the deal with Google Plus, and are there certain organizations or businesses who use it?
You want to take that one,
sure.
Krista?
Okay, so I'm going to Google Plus. I have 3 hours of training on my website. So let me start at the beginning of that. No, just kidding. I'm going to give you like a 2-minute answer. The point is, this is a big, big, big question. So I'm going to try and narrow it down. Google Plus launched about 2 or 3 years ago, and people said, this is Google's version of Facebook. That's really not the case. If you read the patents surrounding Google Plus, Google's using it as an identity network. It's a way to identify people and businesses and all of the things attached to them. So Google's using Google Plus to say, hey, Krista, this is you on the internet, and you have these different websites, and you have this Facebook page. And so they're really using it to connect the dots. The main reason Google Plus matters for businesses is because Google owns another really important asset called search. And if you care about people being able to find you, you need to care a little bit about Google Plus, which means create a page. And Google Plus data actually shows up right in search engine results. So it's really important to create a page with a few good assets, great images, for example, because those will be ported into search engine results. When it comes to businesses and pages actually driving engagement, you know, we're just not seeing that many. So for perspective, an average Facebook user is on Facebook for 7.5 hours a month. An average Google Plus user is on Google Plus for 3.3 minutes a month. Right. So people just aren't there. They're not there. They're not spending time. So if you're looking for engagements and using it as a social network, you'll struggle really hard and probably not get great results. Use it as a search engine tool. Set up a page for your business. If you have a blog post, promote it on Google Plus because that'll help the search engine optimization of that post. But beyond that, the way traditional social networks work, I don't think there are very many businesses getting great results. Even those with lots of connections.
I hate Google Plus.
But how do you really feel?
I pretty much hate it. I mean, I use it a little. It's funny you mentioned the 3-minute statistic because that's about it for me. You know, if I really want to get something out there or if I'm trying to impact the search results of something, you know, I'll go on there or plus one stuff or whatever. But in general, I'm not a big fan.
We do have a Facebook post from Marissa who said, oh, it just jumped off my page there. Just 1 second. Let me go back to it. She's talking about Facebook and Instagram. And she says, where did it go? Good heavens. Here it is. Marissa says that she suggests using Instagram photos to tell and hashtags to connect better on the various sites. And I guess that's, you would agree with that as well. Mm-hmm. Yes. Anything else there? And then we also, there was one other question here. Bill on Facebook also asking about Google Plus and its value. I think we've certainly covered that one. It's not exactly anybody's favorite. So there we go. you talk about Pinterest a little bit. Let's talk a little bit more about that. That sounds to me like the place where you go for craft ideas. I think it's probably more than that.
I love Pinterest. So it took me a while to get it, right? Because I can't do crafts. if you ever look up Pinterest
either.
Fails, that's like me. And I don't do a lot of like cooking or design or anything. So it took me a little while to get Pinterest. But, you know, when I first experienced amazing like personal results was I decided I would make Christmas cookies. And I did a Google search and I got all these just like blue links. And then I would have to click on a page and it was annoying. I went to Pinterest. I searched Christmas cookie recipes. Immediately, tons of pictures. And I can tell by looking at the picture if it's like within my skill set, right? Or if it looks like I would want to eat it, right? So like amazingly powerful. Here's where I think it comes in for businesses. I think, yeah, if you're doing crafts and design, it's obvious, pin your stuff. But I think it's an amazing resource tool. So here's the thing. I do a lot of speaking and people will ask me things like, what books should I read about social media? I used to say like, oh, I don't know, here's four off the top of my head. Now I say, go to my Pinterest page and I have a board called books I recommend you read and just check that out. And they can just click there and go to Amazon and buy it. So they're not like, who's that written by? And, you know, it's just a resource tool.
And it's a lot more than cookies and you know, making something out of spaghetti or whatever for your, you know, a craft.
I'm not a real heavy user myself, but I think what Krista's saying is pretty much spot on. And I think where it can be helpful is if you have any kind of product you want to make people aware of that's visually appealing, it's an incredibly powerful tool to put content out there that people will see in its best light and then link it to something else. And it's easy to use and it's free. So, I mean, it's kind of a no-brainer, you know?
Yeah. Here's the other thing that I love about Pinterest is searching for stuff on Pinterest. So, I mean, you might lose a few hours of your life. But,
go down the rabbit hole.
I've heard it's called
totally
a time suck.
Worth it. Yeah, but here's the thing. Like, I use it as a social media research tool. So one of the biggest challenges for most businesses and even people on Facebook is they're just so boring, right? Like, I look at a lot of Facebook pages and they're like, you know, Krista, can you tell us what we're doing well and what we're not doing well? And I'm like, it's super boring. I don't know how else to tell you. It's just boring. It's not that what you're posting isn't inherently interesting. You're just posting it in a hyper boring way. And so I know, I'm so nice.
She's honest.
So here's the thing though. I don't know. Like, I'm not creative in that way. I don't know how to make something not boring. Go to Pinterest and do a search. I was working with someone and they were posting about like a wine special at a restaurant. And it's like, today's Wednesday, half price wine night, bring your girlfriends and come in. I'm like, that's boring. Go to Pinterest, search wine humor. Oh my gosh. It's completely hysterical. You're still talking about wine. You can still say that your wine is half price, but now you're posting a funny joke about drinking too much wine, which makes people interested in it and want to share it. And so I love Pinterest as a research tool.
This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. We're talking about social media, what's new, and how best to use it. You can call us at 513-419-7100 or email us talk@wvxu.org. You also can find us on Facebook and Twitter. We'll continue our discussion in just a moment. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Marianne Zalesnik. We're talking about social media. Joining me, CEO and lead trainer at Bootcamp Digital, Krista Nair, and solution architect and partner with Definity Partners, Dave Hatter. You can join the conversation. Call us, 513-419-7100. Email talk@wvxu.org. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter. Well, we've talked about Facebook. We've talked about Twitter. We've talked about Instagram a little bit, Google+. What about Tumblr? What the heck is Tumblr?
So Tumblr got attention about maybe a year ago or something like that when it was acquired by Yahoo, I want to say.
That sounds right.
Yeah. And I think of Tumblr, the demographic's super young. So if you're targeting young people, it's not a bad place to spend time. I think of Tumblr as like easy blogging. So on a blog, usually you're sharing some kind of thoughts. You usually write a lot of words. In Tumblr, you can just tumble a video you found on YouTube, or you can tumble a photo that you thought was funny somewhere. So it's kind of like almost a combination of Pinterest and a blog together.
Do you have to add commentary to it? I mean, why can't you just do that on Facebook? Why?
Well, I think the difference, Facebook is private, right? So Facebook, only your friends are going to see it. Whereas on Tumblr, you're creating more like a public space. It's more searchable, right? So like, here's one of my frustrations with Facebook is, let's say there was an event coming up or something and I posted it on Facebook a month ago. It's really annoying to have to go back into your newsfeed to try and find it, even if you posted it.
It's very difficult and annoying, yes.
Yeah, Facebook's all about now, now, now. It's not really kind of like a journal where you might want to search for previous things, and Tumblr lets you do that.
Yeah, I would say, though, to some extent, you could do the same thing with Twitter now that they've made it easier to put pictures out there. But I think the public aspect of it is a key part. And again, the searchability, because Chris has said it several times, and I agree, you know, unless you tell Facebook you want something to be public, well, then it's only shared amongst your friends. Now, you got to be careful because they can do anything they want with it. But in general, Google and other search engines like Bing and Yahoo aren't going to find it by default where they would on Twitter or Tumblr or something.
What about if you want to use YouTube? What do you use that for?
YouTube is awesome.
I love YouTube.
Yeah, so, you know, they say a picture's worth 1,000 words. Well, what does that make a video worth? I don't know, 100,000?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not good at least.
Math. Yeah.
So
You're a finance major.
I know. Who's bad at math? That's why I do marketing now. So if you think about video, it's such a powerful medium. I mean, you can communicate so much more in subtle ways through videos. And, you know, somebody had asked me recently in one of our classes about it, and they were like, well, have you ever got business from it? And, you know, the idea of marketing is like people kind of see your stuff and over time it all works together. But we've gotten leads from YouTube. I had a giant national or international company in London call me. And she was watching a video on YouTube about Nestle's digital learning labs or something. And I came up as a recommended video. And she liked what I was talking about, came to our website and, you know, called us up to do some work with them. So I think there are people, YouTube is the second biggest search engine. So Google is number one, YouTube is number two. And it's such a powerful medium. I think, you know, these days the barrier to create a video is so small. You can create acceptable videos on an iPhone. So there's no reason not to get into it and start experimenting.
Totally agree. I mean, you can obviously have a very high-end professional video made, or you can use like a GoPro or an iPhone or whatever. And, you know, it's in my mind, it's almost like a why not? It's free. It's very simple to do. And with minimalistic skill and expense, you can create videos and put whatever you want out there. And in my mind, it's just one more channel. There's a lot of people there. You have an opportunity to control the content yourself and put whatever you want that people to see out there, and then link it from all these other social networks. So it's a non-starter in my mind. Now, obviously, you have to create content or find content that's worth sharing, but it's so simple.
But you're doing that. You're talking in terms of businesses putting their message out there. What about the average person? And if you put stuff out there, how hard is it to make it go away? Because what if you did this when you were 16, you know, and you had, or 21, and you had the drunk night out, and that video's up on YouTube, or those pictures are on Twitter or Facebook, and they've been shared around. What is that going to do? And what should we be telling our kids when they start dipping their toes into social media?
That's a really good question. I have this discussion with my kids fairly regularly and try to find high-profile stories to say, like, this is exactly what you should not do, bonehead. See this? Because this stuff it will never go away. And I don't know if you saw, in the EU, they recently had a court ruling that basically says that you can ask Google to, quote, forget you. But here's the problem with that. Okay, even though they've now changed the law over there, all Google will do is just remove the links out of their database. The content doesn't go away. It makes it harder to find. But my advice to people with my programmer technologist hat on is, if you want something to be private, do not put it in any kind of electronic form and share it, because A, there will be no way to get rid of it, and that will be increasingly true in the future as storage capacities increase, and B, there's no way you can dictate how someone else can use it. You know, if I send Krista something that's just between the two of us, she could take a picture of it on her phone and send it to someone else, and I wouldn't even know until it showed up on the news tonight. So just because something is shared between friends or, quote, private, it's really not. And if you're not cognizant of that, you're setting yourself up for disaster.
And, you know, this isn't really just a social media problem,
no,
right?
Not.
You hear things about, like, high-profile people where a picture surfaces of them smoking pot when mm-hmm. they were in their 20s or whatever. Like, so even before social media, I think people needed to have a sense of what are you willing to allow yourself to be photographed doing, because you never know where those pictures could turn up. And I just think, you know, people need to really think about how they want to be perceived and how the content they're posting reflects that.
Yeah. Email, text, it's all the same. Once it goes electronic and it leaves your device, the genie's out of the bottle and you're not putting it back in any normal, easy way.
What about Snapchat? That's supposed to disappear, right?
Well, I mean, there's already been proof that it doesn't. So again, you know, A, you have to trust the people that claim the stuff disappears. B, their systems could just be faulty or someone could hack in. And C, don't put it out there if you don't want it now, is my advice.
Let's talk about Snapchat. I have an 11-year-old who and we're the weird parents who, because she's not 13 and all the sites say you have to be 13 to have these accounts, we won't let her have an account because she'd have to lie about her age. That doesn't go over well with her. And a lot of her friends all have these accounts and think we're the bad parents. But what do you think about that? Should kids be on at young ages? And what about things like Snapchat? What does that mean?
I think it's really important for parents to be monitored. I don't have kids, but I think parents need to monitor what their kids are doing. The same way, you know, if your kid was leaving your house, you'd want to know where they were going and who they were with. I think you need to understand that with social media as well. Where are they going? Who are they connecting with? What are they talking about? And you read about all these tragedies of, you know, kids getting bullied through social media, things like that. I mean, kids get bullied in real life too, but parents should be seeing what's going on, whether your kid is doing the bullying or being bullied. You should have some insight as to the kinds of things they're posting and where they're spending their time. You should know what apps are on their phone, how those apps work, whether or not you can see what they're posting. Because, you know, by nature, I think, you know, kids just don't have the same kind of judgment. Even grownups have terrible judgment, yeah. Right? Yeah. And so I think it's important to help them with their judgment and to understand why certain things are inappropriate and how it can work against them.
Yeah, I agree. As someone who does have kids, yeah, they're often really naive and they don't understand the potential long-term consequences of this stuff. And or to Krista's point, you know, you don't know who they're connecting with. You don't know what might be being said in a private setting, whether it's bullying or something worse than that. I think you pretty much, you know, my suggestion would be you need to have their usernames and passwords. You need to be able to log into these things because obviously I can follow my kid on Twitter or whatever, but I'm only going to see the public stuff, you know, direct messages and other things that he or she might be doing behind the scenes I wouldn't necessarily have access to. So, yeah, that would be my advice as well. Check that stuff out. And then I keep constantly trying to beat the message in that, hey, you know, this stuff is permanent. And someday down the road, you may go apply for a job and suddenly something you thought was really funny 3 or 4 years ago won't be seen as funny to that employer.
Social media is our topic today. If you have a question or a comment, 513-419-7100. Email us, talk@wvxu.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. What about things like Foursquare, where you check in? I've never really gotten into Foursquare. I'm not sure I want people to necessarily know I'm away from home that much. But what about Foursquare? Is it a helpful thing? Is it something that's what do you think about it?
I think it's pretty much dead, really. I mean, is anyone really even using the thing anymore?
I don't see a lot of people using it so much because you can check in on Facebook now.
I think Facebook killed it.
Yeah, but I think when it comes to checking into places, I like to check in to places that I'm at just because it's kind of like sharing an experience. Like, oh, I'm at this great new restaurant.
And so how do you check something in? I mean, I'll be honest, I've not done that on Facebook. How do you check in? What do you do?
When you go onto your Facebook app, you'll see a little like places icon. And if you click on that, it allows you to say where you're at. So it's kind of like saying where you happen to be. So you can only check into like a business or something. You can't check into, down the street.
Mm-hmm.
Or your friend's house, unless they've created it as a place on Facebook, which would be a little creepy.
That would be weird.
Yeah. But I mean, you know, again, the reason people are on these social networks is to share experiences, talk about what's going on. I'll check in at a restaurant just to say, hey, here's what I liked. Here's what I didn't like. Yelp is another great example. I think Yelp is probably more useful than Foursquare because of the reviews and mm-hmm. things like that on there.
What is Yelp for people that don't know?
It's basically a site where you can review stuff. And, you know, it's pretty powerful. Again, anything you find on the internet, you should probably take with a grain of salt unless you know the people or you see like a pattern, because people create fake reviews. This is a well-known thing. So, you know, you have to, anything that you read, unless it's coming from a credible source, you probably need to question its validity. But, you know, it can be a powerful tool because, again, if you suddenly see there's hundreds of reviews and they're all good, then that place is probably worth checking out.
And, I would disagree with you a little bit on saying that you know, unless it's a credible source you don't know. Because I think, like, strangers on the internet generally are right, you know? I mean, when it comes to reviews and stuff.
Yeah, but you get a lot of fake ones.
You do, but Yelp does a good job, I think, of filtering those out. And Google does a great job now because it links it to your Google Plus ID. But to me, I travel a ton for work. And what I love about Yelp is I can go to any city and find the restaurants with the best ratings. And in general, there's some exceptions, but I would say in general, something with 4 stars and above is going to be a great experience.
It's probably true.
3.5 is mediocre, and most of the places with 2 stars suck really bad.
Well, what's the difference between doing something like Yelp and then doing something like OpenTable if you're looking for a restaurant?
Same thing.
Yeah, same basic concept, except Yelp is not specific to restaurants.
So you can just get lots of information about an area that you're in.
You could look up like a dentist on Yelp even and see what people thought. And what's cool about Yelp is the people who leave a lot of reviews tend to like write these long narratives, which can be a little annoying sometimes. But, you know, for example, when I go to a restaurant, not only do I base if I'm in a new city, I'll often base it on a Yelp recommendation. But people even go into what they ordered and what they liked and didn't like. And you can rate menu items and just so much cool information to help you make better choices.
Now, 4 years ago, 3 years ago, half of this stuff would have sounded crazy that we wouldn't even know existed. I mean, I don't know how long I've been on Facebook. It's been a little while now, but for heaven's sakes, it seems like things are changing. Okay, so predict for us. What are we going to see next year that we're going to be stunned that's going to be there that we didn't know about now?
That is a really good question. I'm not entirely sure.
So for me, I'll tell you, I'm really hot on the visual sites. And I'm really hot on Pinterest still. I think we're only at the beginning of starting to see the real power of a site like Pinterest. Because if you think about it, Facebook is where you connect with people you already know. But you can go on Pinterest and find, you know, like I have a motorcycle, for example. I could go on Pinterest and find somebody else who has a board of really cool women's motorcycle jackets, you know, and look through that and find stuff that I like. And now I have something in common with this stranger because I appreciate her taste in motorcycle jackets. And I think, you know, it's very dominated by design right now, but I think there's so much more opportunity for Pinterest beyond just some of the categories that are popular on there now. And I think the same thing is true with Instagram. Instagram is a great place to connect with new people and see what other people are sharing and doing and talking about. And I think those kinds of things are going to continue to grow where it's more photo, video, and image-based and less text-based, you know, and connecting with strangers and finding people who share passions.
Yeah, I think anything related to video or photos will continue to gain ground, and stuff that's more text-oriented will continue to fall off just because there's so much more power. And again, photograph really does allow you to say so much with, you know, so little.
What about the new wearable cameras I'm hearing about that take a picture every 30 seconds or something wherever you go? I mean, are people's entire lives just going to be documented and available online?
Probably.
I don't know. I mean, you know, you have Google Glass where I've tested it. It's neat. I can't imagine wanting to wear it.
Yeah, me either.
But you know, you have Google Glass where you can be recording stuff. And I think that there's... I think there's a point of just because you can doesn't mean you should, right? So even if I could record everything through Google Glass, I really don't have a use for that. I'm not going to go back and watch it all. You know, it reminds me of people who you go on a vacation and they literally are filming
like the whole time.
The whole thing. I'm like, are you going to go home and spend 3 days reliving your whole vacation? Who wants to do, even if you can, why would I want to do that? And so I do think there needs to be kind of like a usefulness and it needs to fulfill some kind of a need. And I'm not sure that mass recording does that.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. And I think once the novelty of some of this stuff wears off, you'll see less of it over time because there isn't a real purpose for it. So you recorded every second of you eating some meal or something. Who cares? Because that's part of the big thing of this. And usually the most complaints I get from people are, why do I want to read this? Or I don't care about any of this stuff. Why do I care about this?
Why do people always put their dinner on Facebook? I don't know. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? I mean, I put food up on Facebook, but is that, you know, is it just too much?
I think every person has to decide for themselves what's the appropriate stuff for them to share and the right frequency and that sort of thing. I don't think so. I mean, to Krista's point, you know, again, if you shared some great meal you had at some restaurant, I would probably be more inclined to go there simply because you said it was good than not, you know.
Thank you for being here. It's been great. We could talk for another hour. I'm sure of it.
easily.
We'll all connect on Facebook after the show or some form of social media. Thanks so much
for joining us
today. And we've been talking today about social media. My guests, CEO and lead trainer at Bootcamp Digital, Krista Nair, and solution architect and partner with Definity Partners, Dave Hatter. Cincinnati Edition is produced by Pete Reitmeier. Today's technical director was Bruce Ellis. Archives of our program are available on our website, wvxu.org. I'm Marianne Zalesnik.